You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO at 102.7 FM.
What is home? Not a place you're confined to, surely, but a place to live and also a place you can leave and return to. However, it seems this is not true for all Canadians. Several have been finding their return home to Canada from work or visits abroad, facing serious obstacles. Obstacles created by the Government of Canada itself. On the phone from Toronto to discuss this is human rights lawyer Hediat Nizami. Greetings, Hediat, and welcome to Vancouver Cooperative Radio.
Thank you.
Is there an actual legal right for citizens to leave and return to their country of citizenship?
There is indeed. There is. There are obviously many international treaties, and including the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. I'll just read it for you. I think it's Article 13, if I'm correct. Article 13 of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights states, everyone has the right to leave any country, including his own, and to return to his country. That's the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. That was, I believe, put together in 1948, and Canada is a signatory to it. But we don't even need to go to international instruments. We have our own law, our Canadian Charter. Article 6 of our Canadian Charter states that a citizen of Canada has the right to enter, leave, or remain in their country. So they have every right, any citizen has every right to leave their country, to come back to the country free of any type of obstacle by the government. In fact, the government is obligated to make it possible for them to come back to Canada, and this is what the courts have noted in two very recent decisions, both in Mr. Kader's case and in Mr. Abdurazak's case.
But it seems the Canadian government has developed a practice of, to put it with an understatement, impeding the exercise of these rights under the Charter or the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. You mentioned a couple of people's names. For me, the name of Suad Haji Muhammad, the Canadian woman who was in Kenya and wanted to come back, comes immediately to mind. Could you tell us a little bit about her experience with trying to return to her country?
Absolutely. These are the two cases I mentioned are the cases that the court has had to make a ruling on. That wasn't the case with Mrs. Mahmoud's case. It didn't get to that point, but she was stuck, my understanding is, she was stuck in Kenya, originally from, in Sudan, sorry. She apparently, what had happened is an official on the ground had looked at her and looked at her Canadian citizenship card and passport and said, well, this picture is not yours. The picture apparently was 4 years outdated. We don't know all the details, and I'm sure it will come out because I understand she has sued the government over this, and all of the facts will come out. But it appears, based on everything that we know, that not a thorough investigation was done with her. In fact, her passport was taken away from her and handed it over to the foreign government's authorities. She was thrown in jail at the request of Canadian government, was investigated, separated from her Canadian son who was here. She had many other documents on her. Now, this is a very clear case of, obviously, the Canadian officials who were underground and whoever else was involved from Canada, basically breaching the laws in terms of their obligation to Canadian citizens and they appear on record to be more than willing to just simply ignore it and let her suffer the way she suffered, which is very troubling. So we'll have to wait and see what exactly happened. I know the individual who was at the center of investigating these issues, or the officer on the ground, has now no longer has his or her job, but I think that alone is not enough, because the pattern established is not does not just apply in one case. It is obviously based on the other cases we've seen. There are a number of people that are facing these kinds of problems. In this case, they're claiming it was a It was obviously they didn't think she was a Canadian citizen, but in other cases they knew they were Canadian citizens, but still impeded their return to Canada.
Yes, and one case of that kind is the man Abu Sufyan Abdul Razak, who was in Sudan and who was in fact staying in the Canadian embassy there, but they wouldn't allow him to return to Canada, which was his right and his wish.
Absolutely, and in fact, they only allowed him to return after the court ruled that they must do it, repatriate him. He's a Canadian citizen, the charter applies to him, and he must be returned within a month. It's the troubling part of all of this is that what we don't understand is why the government will resist repatriating or assisting its citizens until the courts get involved and tell them to do so. But it's the problem, the other problem is that it appears that there is this treatment doesn't apply to everybody. We know, for example, of the case of Brandon Martin, who was stuck in Mexico and run into trouble with the law there. The government was very eager to bring him back, bring her back, send a plane, and do just that. Yet we have a lot of other individuals who either weren't born in Canada, but were Canadian citizens, or just born in Canada that might be a different color. So there are a lot of issues that will have to be addressed because obviously the treatment of Canadian citizens appears to be a two-tier one, and that's not what the law is on citizenship.
One of the people who was abandoned or disowned, as the phrase goes, some people are saying these are disowned Canadians by the Canadian government. Faraz Siddiqui said, perhaps I'm not Canadian enough. Do you think there's that characteristic in government policy that some Canadians are not Canadian enough because of their name, their religion, the country they were visiting, or the country they may have been born in before becoming Canadian citizens?
Well, based on everything we know, based on all of these cases, and there are many, there are three others that I didn't even mention, or four others, including Maya Rar, Mr. Almaty, and Nuruddin. There's a number of cases, and if you look at them, and those were the ones that obviously the treatment was even worse because we understand that Canadian government wanted certain information from interrogators outside of Canada that Canadians themselves might not have been able to, permitted under the law to do. But based on all of these cases, I think he's absolutely correct. I think whoever is making the decisions on these cases obviously makes a distinction between who they believe is Canadian enough and who they believe is not Canadian enough. And this is at the core of this issue. You know, are we allowed to treat our citizens differently when the law does not treat anyone differently? And at the end of the day, I think it harms Canada as well. It harms the credibility of our own country. Citizenship is defined in international treaties to be, every citizen, if you look at any international instrument, and even Canadian-own instruments, the term citizen itself refers to a person who is endowed with full political and civil rights in the state concerned, and the state has an obligation to protect its citizens when they're outside of Canada as well. I mean, otherwise, why would be a citizen of a state? You might as well be stateless or homeless. But that's what it means to be a part of a society, to have to be entitled to those protections, both civil and political protections, inside and outside of Canada. Nobody suggests that Canada should impose its laws on other countries, but Canada must protect its citizens regardless of where and they are born or what the color of their skin is, because at the end of the day, what defines you as a citizen is not those things, is where your ties are, it's where your connection is, where your home is, where you call home, which, you know, we all know that we can't really move too far away from homes and we come back to our homes. If the ties and the home is in Canada, it's their home, and they are entitled to that protection.
In the cases of the people you've been discussing, it was really through grassroots, through advocacy, through mobilizing pressure in the country itself that these people finally won a right of return, their legal right. Would you say that there are other cases where people may not have had either that ability or been intimidated from such campaigns that would expand the list of people that are being disowned by the Canadian government?
I don't know of any cases, but based on what we've seen, as I stated before, the only time where our government has acted and brought people back and has been the times when the public itself has been outraged by it, and the courts have been forced to order them. So, but I'm will be surprised. I'll be very surprised if there are no other cases where people have not either don't have the friends that some of these individuals have, or don't have the ability to contact people. They're stuck in some prison somewhere. I'll be very surprised if there aren't other Canadian citizens in that situation right now.
Well, thank you very much, Hadet, for speaking with us this morning, and good luck in your human rights work on behalf of such Canadians.
Thank you very much.
I've been speaking with Hadet Nizami. He is a human rights lawyer, and we reached him in Toronto.